Welcome back to Web3 Unpacked, everyone. I'm Rich Pasqua, and joining us today is S.Y. Lee, co-founder and CEO of Story Protocol, a platform that provides the tools to seamlessly capture IPs, allowing users to create with ownership built in. Welcome, S.Y.
Nice to meet you, Rich. It's a big honor to get invited here. Thank you so much.
Yes, we're happy to have you. And S.Y., you've been in and out of media and content creation for a very long time now, as well as being an entrepreneur, building platforms like Radish that you sold. That's awesome. That got acquired a few years back. And that set you up really, really nicely for Story Protocol. And I think you and I truly have an understanding and share a deep passion, one for storytelling, but also the idea of controlling one's IP and privacy. It's a big deal. And you are, putting a big stake in the ground right now with Story Protocol. And we're excited to learn more about it.
Awesome. Thank you. Happy to share what we're doing at Story Protocol. Happy to share also my journey and quick background as well, if that's helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, part of what we do here is we like to understand the innovators behind, behind the scenes. And how did you get started in crypto, blockchain, dApps?
So I think, first of all, crypto, I think, is a technology, a very transforming technology. And it is for me, it's a tool and also a philosophy. But for me, the real passion that started it all was I was always trying to innovate at the intersection of media, entertainment, content, and technology, right? Technology disrupts content and media, entertainment, IP in general. And always it requires a new business model to, respond to that challenge and capture the upside. So the first company that actually started right out of college was a pre-Substack, which was basically, how do I help journalists and bloggers and content creators monetize their work and their writing when the advertising-driven model for journalism has gone away? So I try to use a Patreon-style, Kickstarter-style crowdfunding to kind of get journalism monetized, but it was a very difficult road. Obviously, journalism is a very hot space to monetize. And then I pivoted to Radish, which was a mobile serialized fiction platform. And the whole idea, thesis was that, how do you create IP in a very lean way, and also in a very data-driven way with audience feedback, and be able to scale that across different mediums? And for me, serialized fiction, you can start with one chapter and get feedback, and you can see so much rich data. And then also scale the IP very quickly because it's just writing in a very cheap way. So that was the company, and we grew to tens of millions of dollars of revenue with the, obviously I was a first-time entrepreneur, a lot of pivots, and then scale that. And I ended up selling to Kakao at a good time. And I was served as a chief strategy officer at Kakao Entertainment, which is kind of almost, it's the Korea Spotify, it's the Korea's CAA, WME, it's the Korea's also biggest storytelling platform all combined in one entity. It's like the digital Disney out of Korea and with the 10 billion plus market cap. And so, yeah, so that was a very great experience. But I had two motivations from that experience, two learnings from that experience. First, I've always wondered, right, what if I could have started a company in a third or fourth year of internet or third or fourth year or second year of mobile? I started a mobile content company eighth year into it, 2016, many years after actually mobile revolution started. And I realized that it's so important when you want to make a transformative and impactful company, you want to be actually at the nascent stage of the technology when it's forming. It's a formative stage. And at the time, I think the crypto, I had a happy belief that crypto and blockchain are going to transform many different industry. And this intersection of crypto and content and IP was just starting with NFTs. So that was very exciting to me. And I thought basically the fact that with NFTs, now you have ownership and scarcity with digital media is almost like as transformative as like China going from communism to private capitalism. And that transformative stage when you're in there at that time, when it's action nascent and formative, it's a very, very exciting thing. All the crypto has been around 10 plus years at the time when I started. It was really mostly around finance, but the IP content was just starting. So that was very exciting to me, number one. Number two, I was a little bit frustrated with the old model of content and IP, IP development, IP distribution. So if you think about even a platform like Netflix, what happens is I think it's a very data-driven company using data science. You use the data, amazing data analytics and data science to understand the audience taste, but you basically use this data to draw a bunch of content budget, a marketing budget to create content. It doesn't have the type of network effect that you want in like a social media company, all these companies. IP development distribution is still very top-down. So they are data-driven top-down content creation distribution platform, but they're not, there's no network effect of where users and other contributors, other creators incentivized to contribute to development of the IP and distribution of the IP. And I was excited that Web3 now actually can infuse network effect into IP development and IP distribution and actually distribute that and actually empower the entire globe of creators, fans, contributors to be a participant in IP development and distribution process. That was exciting to me. With the Web3 kind of allows that incentive mechanism and ownership mechanism around all those folks. So that was very exciting to me. Those two things really contributed. And obviously, I think it's really, how you get into this industry is really people. I think two of the mentors and the closest friends in the Radish journey and were actually deep in crypto. One of them was, I think, Charlie Sunghurst, who was ex-head of strategy of Microsoft. He's been investing in crypto from 2013-12. I think he's one of the few people, I think, started talking in Silicon Valley to Mark Rendis and Reid Hoffman about Bitcoin and all these things. And he's been a huge inspiration to me. The other is Simon Kim, who's the founder of Hashed, which is the leading kind of a crypto venture fund, a Web2 venture fund out of Asia and Korea. And he's the first check in, first seed check in actually Axie Infinity to Sandbox to many of the transformative content crypto, IP crypto companies. So that was very exciting to me. Yeah. And really opened my eyes into crypto over the last several years. And when I'm still young, and when I still sold a company at 30, I wanted to have another shot, and I wanted to really make sure for the next company I build, I'm at the formative stage of technology. Yeah.
Lots of great points in there, SY. Just on how you got started down to the people. People are super important. And I'm not talking about community. I'm talking about people that are very close to you, right? And you've had a couple of legends close to you, which is awesome. You need guidance. You need constant feedback.
Of course.
And validation on ideas and technical strategies and whatnot. So that's really important. And I love the idea that, obviously, IP on the blockchain or Web3 IP could be set free and unsupervised, and the community and contributors really take part in that economy, right? You're creating a new economy for yourself and with others. So it's a great story. That's awesome. Now I want to get kind of peel the layers back of Story Protocol and have our audience kind of understand a little bit more about it. Can you give us like the 40,000 foot view of Story Protocol and what it's doing and perhaps the problems it's solving?
Of course. We are building the programmable IP layer of the internet. And we basically, what programmable IP layer does, it turns IPs into networks that transcend mediums and applications and allow IPs to tap into global creativity and liquidity. And what I mean by that is basically, at the moment, an IP is trapped in legal documents, business development departments, studio, and platforms. IP is trapped. So if you want to take an IP that from a big studio, Hollywood studio, from Disney, to if you or just even UGC, and actually make a remix, transform it, repurpose it, and actually commercialize it or do something with it, it's very opaque what you need to do. Maybe to get the IP legacy IP, you need to talk to WME, CAA, CTA to develop business development, all these different places. Or if you want to actually get even a UGC IP and commercialize, you can do it, but it's just like very there's a legal risk. There's so much there's not a straight straight bullet a silver bullet to basically solve this kind of issues. But what and even in Web3 IP, NFTs validated ownership and scarcity into digital media and IPs. But the great unlock for Web3 is the ability to decompose what we call composability, which is the ability to extend someone else's work without permissionlessly. That's important part. That's why we have this. It's crypto is open source and steroids, open source with crypto economics built in, and that's what it does. But let's say if you want to bring someone else's Bored Ape, bring someone else's Project Penguin, and actually bring that into a metaverse game as a character, turn it into a chatbot, turn it into animated short. You have to probably find the best NFT lawyer, specialist NFT lawyer in the place. You have to go talk to the guy. You have to have extensive negotiations like traditional IP. It doesn't have the type of composability that DeFi has or, a stablecoin has and all these things. So what we do with Story Protocol, we turn IP into programmable IP where all these, licensing terms and royalty sharing terms around IP is programmed into the IP set by the creator, and any machine, any creator, any application developers can interact with it permissionlessly and turn it into a network of IPs in different applications onto the protocol. So, and we are a developer first ecosystem. So you can imagine a situation where someone creates a Webtoon application, generative AI-driven Webtoon applications, where it makes it easy for any creator to create a very, very attractive, a short TikTok-like anime, manga, serialized content. And the characters and the stories are getting pumped out, and these are getting registered into our protocol, into our IP registry. Those characters and those stories can now have licensing parameters that the creator has set. Okay, you can use and turn this into different mediums, but make sure you credit me. Make sure you give X percentage of revenue if you commercialize it. Now, another person is creating a chatbot app, a Story Protocol. And when you're creating a chatbot app, like a character AI with a bunch of characters that you can talk to, you normally have to have a cold start problem of onboarding so many different creators onto that platform. But now as a app developer, you can directly plug into the characters that's already registered through this Webtoon app and actually transform them into chatbots right away. So what it brings is you have this incredible network effect for the IPs that creators create. Now your IP is not just a siloed IP that's existing as a solitary, lonely IP in the sea of IPs. That IP is no longer an atom, just a separate atom. it can be turned into molecules by mashing together different items by other creators, by other app developers instantly in a permissionless way. It's a Lego piece that, you know, the world can play with. So that's what we're doing in Story Protocol.
Yeah, so you're tracking the life cycle, the entire life cycle of a piece of medium, which whether it's video, animation, a game, text, graphic, anything, right?
It's life cycle of the IP on that process, but a lot of people think we are like a copyright protection platform or something like that. It's not, that's not the purpose. It's more of an offensive framework where I created this IP. Guys, build on top of this. And here are the ways you can build on top of this. Follow these rules around licensing. Mm-hmm. Follow these rules around remixing. You can turn it into any medium. You can turn it into, give me this kind of rev share. And all these things are done by smart contracts. And these are not just readable by creators. These are readable by AI models, different applications. All these terms are programmed, encoded. It's machine readable and machine writable. And you can basically turn your IP into a network. Yeah. Mm. Of IPs.
And all of this is done through, is the actual piece of medium an individual, say it's a character for a manga animation or cartoon, is each character its own NFT that you're interacting with?
Yes. And as you said, IP is a very broad term, intellectual property. Yeah. Our initial focus is creative IPs. And it can be a very broad range of things. One is music, characters, to images. It can even be AI models. Mm. Can even be the outputs of AI models. It can be training data. All of these different forms of creative data outputs are IPs that can now not only just exist in its own, own just like a metadata, but it actually has a layer of interaction, layer of composability that other people can interact with permissionlessly. So that's what it is. And just to go down a little bit technical, what it is basically NFT mostly, as I said, has been just it's a proof of ownership and scarcity for that IP. It's you're injecting scarcity ownership into a digital media file. And if you actually dig down into it, mostly it has been a pointer to media file. So if you look down in the NFT, it's just pointing to a certain media file, right? It's pointing to a media file. But, what we do with Story Protocol, now what happens is we use the ERC 6551 standard where you get a smart contract where you basically what it does, every NFT now has its own smart contract wallet, like you and I have a smart contract wallet, and that becomes a portal into our protocol, and you can use different modules through this smart contract wallet, this portal, and you can use licensing module. You can use a royalty sharing module, and you set your licensing terms in a very modularized way. You can customize your license, you customize your royalty sharing. All these metadata around licensing and now royalty sharing information is now baked into that smart contract wallet. It gets stored into smart contract wallet. So you no longer are just basically seeing this NFT with just digital media file, but it has a little bit richer information that so that other IP creators and app developers or even AI models can interact with this IP and NFT frictionlessly and repurpose it or create derivative IPs or create a new software out of it. So that's what it is basically under
the awesome.
Hood. Yeah.
And, you know, as you were explaining a lot of stuff, you know, you can't help but think like, wow, number one, the old school way of kind of getting permission to use assets or IP from someone else is archaic, right? The traditional way, you got to go to an, you know, you got to talk to accountants and lawyers and everyone else under the sun in corporate America. Now it's done, you know, seamlessly through an NFT and a bunch of check boxes, basically. Like, what do you want to use it for? There's a free version, there's a paid version, or there, you know, you have to pay rights to it, whatever it may be. Even you're making even the standard ERC-721 smart contract protocols look old, which is a good thing, because it does need progress.
Just to be a little controversial, we're turning what we call static JPEG files into programmable IP. In the same way, you had a static dollar bill, and you turn it into stable coin that can jump from Uniswap to Compound to Aave, and it make very complex, you know, permissionless peer-to-peer financial system. In the same way, we're turning IPs programmable.
Yeah, that's amazing, and it's a whole new layer to the NFT game, which I love. And this is something, like I said before, this is something that I've been waiting for a very, very long time. And I think, you know, it has profound, it can and will have profound impact once released on the world. It means that people, creators, can kind of move fast and not second guess themselves and set up the rules, as you were mentioning, beforehand for anyone, any number of instances. It could be one set of rules or 100 different types of things that you can go through to use this. So now, we know, I mean, we obviously from your website and from what you've been talking about, we know your core audiences could be anyone from writers to bloggers to podcasters to anyone creating medium. But what audiences do you see Story Protocol opening up to in the future?
First of all, I think it's all, there's a little bit of sequence here. Obviously, we're a very creator-first company, but at the moment, we are an infrastructure for intellectual property. We are a protocol layer, and we are initially the very short-term focus is getting a lot of developers to build interesting content media IP-related applications. This could range from a generative AI enabled storytelling app that are using bunch of different characters, bunch of different worlds, almost like story Lego. You can mesh together a Azuki world and some different manga characters that the community created or you created and mesh them together to create a very interesting TikTok style anime manga serialized content. Which is actually, this is one of the applications that was actually built in Ethereum Denver. This person, Kaiser, was, you know, REIR and actually a participant in Alpha Hackathon last winter and actually built this during Ethereum Denver, and which is probably the biggest crypto developer conference in the US, and actually won the general hackathon in Ethereum Denver out of 250 teams, and it was a five winners of the hackathon. Two, it can be a company like MyShell with the million users and us tens of thousands of character creators who everyone is creating new character AI chatbot in a character AI style format, and that app is also our, you know, that developer, that application is also on our application. And you know, someone was building GitHub for music where the beats get registered as IPs and you can mash together these beats to create a song. And all the people who created beats are getting attributed, are getting compensated with this music are being monetized and created and so on and so forth. So, you know, the idea is, you know, the protocol layer is at first, you know, is a set of tools, set of things that develop because it builds on top of. Now, when you're developing a IP media content related application, all different content that are coming out of your application, art images, characters, stories, AI models, AI outputs, all these things are now stored as IPs onto our protocol. So the first element is our global IP registry that we're building. All these things are stored. Now these IPs that you're pumping out of your applications don't exist in silo. That becomes all interoperable across different applications, right? So the more we have more exciting developers actually creating this great applications for creators and consumers, the creators now, the musicians can use GitHub for music. The Webtoon creators can create use the generative AI during collaborative manga creation platform, anime creation platform. We have a company called Magma with 2 million artists. And basically, almost like a Figma type experience for game artists and illustrators creating art images. And all these IPs they're creating get stored. Now it's grabbable and usable and extensible by game developers to someone creating a manga right away. All right. So for us, the initial short term is getting exciting developers serving creators. And once those developers are excited about what you can, the fact that IPs now become interoperable and IP can become a network through this ecosystem, you know, we can be able to serve more and more creators. So that's been the initial focus, has been getting a lot of exciting developers to build very exciting apps, integrate exciting content generation and creation and consumption apps on the protocol. Yeah.
It's really interesting. And if I'm hearing you correctly, as I'm building an application or an experience or whatever it may be, I actually can use Story Protocol as I'm building it. Maybe it's over 2 years I'm building an interactive comic book or a manga cartoon, and it's progressive. And each character that comes out is now registered through Story Protocol in perpetuity. Can I now, maybe this is too detailed, but as I'm creating a story, maybe I'm going to retire a character, to use the manga example. Mm-hmm. Can I retire assets so it's no longer available to use?
Yes, that's definitely possible as an IP owner. Yes. Yes.
Very, very cool. Yes. Awesome. Now, this really sounds like kind of a dream come true, actually, for a lot of creators. Like I said, we're only looking at it at the surface right now, but once it's released, your content now can have a life of its own without you being a babysitter, right? Exactly. So,
exactly. And that's scary for some creators. That's also scary for creators. You feel like we say Web3 is about control, but you're also, I think Web3 is not about control. Web3 is giving up control.
Yeah, actually. Good point.
Really,
really good point.
Yeah, like you can imagine an equity company that's owned 100% by one person. Like you can have a great gaming company that's owned 90% plus by one founder. But you can never see a successful tens of billions of market cap, billions of market cap token network with 90% owned by one founder, right? Actually, what the founder is doing, they're constantly giving up their token ownership to actually invite others to build on top of their network. And actually, same for IP here, because this is a very interesting medium where you're actually turning IP into open source. Bringing value capture mechanism, attribution mechanism, and we're building that in to that open source mechanism. So I call it open source on steroids, because open source really invites collective intelligence to build on top of your IP. Even code is a form of IP. It was a technology IP. And now the open source development movement completely transformed the world of software development, right? But you actually put that on steroids, accelerate that by giving incentives for creators or developers to build on top of you. Yeah.
Yeah, you can bake in any kind of conditions onto it.
Yes.
Which is really exciting. And like I said, like the world hasn't seen anything like Web3 or blockchain cryptography ever. And it's really mind blowing, and people still have to kind of get their minds into that. But this is like next level in the sense of really tracking, really being able to monetize your assets, share. And I love the idea that you're speaking about this in an open source kind of way, because I've had this conversation a thousand times with people that what happened to the closed walled gardens, right? The Apples, the Facebooks, when everyone is now starting to work on the world's computer, if you will, and operating very, very differently, and perhaps using an operating system that is completely different than, say, a Windows or an Apple iOS or anything else like that.
Rich, maybe I wasn't very specific, but I think that's completely correct. And when I say world's programmable IP layer that we're building, one is a global IP ledger that tracks and captures all the IPs. And now it's IP that is programmable. The programmability allows composability, because now you're programmed permissionless licensing to permissions royalty sharing terms. With smart contracts, you can just interact directly to these IPs and basically create a bunch of derivatives and repurpose in any machine, any developers, any creators can use that. It's a readable and writable, ownable, IP layer of the internet that we're building. Yeah.
Fantastic. So now, being a creative person that I am, I'm obviously very interested in this whole world. But you know what? I want to know, I speak with a lot of technology people, a lot of CTOs, CMOs, CEOs who are building wonderful products, right? And services on the blockchain or Web3. And my immediate mind goes to, well, do I need to understand Rust or Solidity to work with Story Protocol? What is the, and I know you're, nothing is fully baked just yet. You're in product development, and that's totally understood. But what is your vision of like the user experience for an end user?
The user experience, just like users don't interact mostly directly with the infrastructure, but they're interacting with the Uniswap. They interact with OpenSea. They're interacting with these different applications. As an infrastructure layer, you also have front-end applications that you're interacting with that are on top of the protocol. So I'll give you an example. We've integrated Magma, which has 2 million users, an artist. And what they do is it's a collaborative art illustration software where up to 50 artists and illustrators and game, can collaborate to create an asset, art asset. And that, when the folks are creating these IPs, and registering these IPs, you can have a ownership split among these actually creators and IP artists. And you can also show register as a metadata whether you've used AI tools on the product or not, to show human originality on the product. And those get registered. And there's no There's not there. It's completely abstracted away. All the crypto elements. You don't need to have it's all, it's gasless. It's wallet-less, it's all kind of abstracted away. And it's all, you're using the front end of it. It's a Web2 company, but they are excited by the decentralized IP ledger that can show proof they own the IP. The AI was not used. They can split the ownership among these different creators. So that's an example of a platform an artist can use in a very seamless way as a Web2 mainstream consumer. Company like Sakai, which won the Denver Hackathon.
Right. So say I'm Figma, right? You brought up Figma before, which is a tool that many creatives love, and including myself. And maybe they want to create a plugin that has this kind of story protocol, API built into it, right? And yes, as we're creating assets for a game, for a website, for a book, whatever it may be, they could all go into a little database that just is on the side and communicates with Story Protocol.
Definitely.
And then it's automated, and there's no...
Exactly.
You just eliminated like 10 teams.
that's exactly what we're doing. That's actually the experience in Magma. That's the experience in that's the experience in Lens Protocol, Orbit, Orb. That's the experience in many of the Sakai. That's the experience. So you use the front end. Certain apps will actually say, it's a one size fits all policy. If you're you sign the terms of service, any content that's getting created on this application will have this kind of a licensing layer, composability layer, and it gets automatically registered onto this IP registry that Story Protocol is building. That's decentralized. That's not owned by one company, one corporation. And everyone follows 30-70 rev share, for instance, a global medium, any medium remixing, that kind of thing. Or certain apps will say, okay, as a creator, when you create on this front end, you can customize. You can play with the IP licensing parameters yourself, right? The developers themselves will compete in this marketplace of applications to attract the right customers. And certain apps will say, okay, it'll be too much of a friction to have everyone set one by one this kind of licensing parameters. Let's just make it very seamless. It's all done in the back end as a UGC platform. Certain apps will say, okay, every time they're creating content, there's a licensing parameter that you can set one by one. Yeah, so all these are set by the front end applications. Yeah. And in the case of Magma, actually, like Figma, which is a Figma type app, when they create an asset, they can register an IP, and then they can set and customize their own stuff at the moment. That's how it's experiences. Yeah.
Yeah, very, very cool. Now, only because I'm thinking through this whole thing as you're talking, and what part of my brain is figuring out the mechanics of it, and the other one is dreaming of ways to use it, right? Which is this is a good thing for you guys. One of the things that, okay, IP is obviously you want to protect it. Now, the idea of theft, right? So if someone, let's take a big movie studio,
yes,
releases a big movie, they use the Story Protocol technology, right? Web3 technology. It now has a layer of IP protection on it. But I'm Joe, pirate, and I play the movie, I record it on another device and set it free on the dark web or wherever it is. That now that layer is missing, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
No, Rich, right. But this is true for any framework.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give you an example. Shutterstock and Getty Images made a multi-billion dollar business out of image licensing, made it really easy. There are still people who can use Shutterstock, Getty Images, in a non-legal way. But they're a multi-billion-dollar business. There's hundreds of millions of revenue, but maybe billion-plus revenue with folks who are who find that process very simple and easy and intuitive. Before Spotify, everyone downloaded everything on Napster for free. All these illegal right. music. Spotify made it very easy, easier experience to have the music to consume music IPs in a very easy, seamless way. And they basically ace the user experience of that. And getting images shutter so ace experience so image licensing. So I think there's gonna if we make it intuitive and UX friendly enough, there's gonna be a huge chunk of population who are gonna be remixing and licensing and using all these IPs with the Story Protocols infrastructure. That there will be people who are we're not following these rules. We made programmable IP license. We have a PIL PIL license, programmable IP license that we created to basically as a main license that the creators can use to customize their IP. Think of it as almost like safe notes for what Combinator Safe Notes has done to capital investments into seed stage companies, because company early stage founders don't have the legal frame kind of a power, legal resources to create this extremely difficult series seed documents. And a very, very short document that's very intuitive for entrepreneurs that they can play with a few parameters and create an amazing investment doc for investors to invest and just move on for quick. The same way we create this PIL for this kind of purpose so that they can set their parameters around licensing very, very easily. So I think that license is actually legally enforceable, and we've done that in that way. So actually, as a last resort, you can take it to court, which obviously we don't want that today. So we now are developing, intricate and hopefully very useful dispute models. When there are these disputes, copyright disputes, IP disputes, there are incentives for people who are flagging it. There are punishments for people to do that and on the protocol. So we're using cryptographic and economic crypto game theoretical infra and Rails to make this happen. So, so I would like to say that just in Web 2, this has already happened as well. So it's really making the right incentives for app developers to the creators and the users of the protocol to police this, enforce this, and punishment mechanism, slashing mechanism for folks who are not following it, and also have the legal thing as a last resort to take it to the off-chain legal dispute world, and also as a protocol to make the user experience incentive mechanism punishment as attractive as possible, so people that can't follow the happy medium, which is the Getty Image Spotify Shutterstock path of the protocol. Yeah,
in 2.0 land, there's no incentives to say, hey, SY, I found a new playlist on Spotify that's awesome. I just send it to you. But now you can bake in like every time you share my content, whether it's a song or graphic or whatever, I'm involved. So now I think of immediately my mind goes to how do we use this in social media platform applications, Twitters, Facebooks, YouTube. How do we bake that in? Right.
To be honest, obviously a killer outcome would be for us to actually integrate to YouTube and Twitter and all these Web2 platforms. But I think obviously it's going to be Ethereum or DeFi didn't start by saying, I'm going to integrate with PayPal. I'm going to integrate with JP. I'm going to integrate with traditional financial ways. I think the more right thing to do is create a attractive parallel future, parallel ecosystem, and show the upside and the amazingness of the alternative path and ecosystem first. It's a long road. It's taken, I think, several years before even like a traditional player like PayPal started integrating with Ethereum. BlackRock to integrate with Ethereum. It takes a long time. But you have to show the power of this networked IP, programmable IP that creates a network of developed IPs in this small proof of concept way in a crypto native ecosystem and gradually expand it. Any ambitious kind of vision, it takes a long time. But it starts from showing an alternative kind of future. And that's kind of what we're doing at Story Protocol with the set of applications who are aligned in our value system. First, like iShell to Sakai, these kind of applications that we're coming bringing on board are actually, doing this.
Yeah. And you know what? It's not, I don't see this for every piece of content. Like, it'd be cool if everything was kind of tagged with Story Protocol's, IP protection and governance, but not everything. So I'm on Twitter and I'm like making a comment that doesn't need protection. But if I'm sharing, like if I'm a writer, yes, a baked-in API might help because my words are my art, right? But yeah. If I'm sharing a YouTube video, like for me, I share my stuff all over the place. And to have my videos go out, my podcast about, S.Y. Lee and Story Protocol is going to go out next week. And if I had it tagged, I share it on X, it's just going to be tagged and it's protected. The platform doesn't matter just yet. But to your point, the integration would be amazing, actually.
Yeah, the integration would be amazing. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it's funny, when you're talking about PayPal and crypto and, Square, and now you've got Elon Musk and X talking about crypto payments. It's like glacial, the movement. For you and I, it's glacial. It can't really happen fast enough. And once that happens, obviously everything starts to, the conversion of TradFi into digital assets is obviously the biggest play these days. But really, you look at the scales and the buckets of economies that are being developed. Yes, so now I can send crypto anywhere in the world in 3.5 milliseconds. That's awesome. And it's, uses cryptography. Amazing. Now you've got NFTs too. Great. But now the next economy, the biggest economy is the creator economy. There's a lot of people out there that are going to be displaced by some technologies, a tremendous amount of people, actually. The way they're going to make money is keep creating, keep entertaining, keep making things that you love, and someone will eventually latch on and you've got a fan base now. But now you can actually activate your fan base and make them active participants in not only creating and remixing, which I think is really cool, but in the economy of it. SY is saying, this comic that I made, everyone, like you're saying, open source, everyone can have a slice of the pie, which is really exciting. Now, as we wind down just a little bit, and this has been really educational and mind opening, actually, because now my mind is going with lots of possibilities on how to use this. What do you beyond what you're doing? I know you're super pumped and thrilled about your product, but in the world of Web3, what are you excited about for the next year?
In the world of Web3, what am I excited about next year?
Or within a year?
I think number one, as a person at the intersection of IP and crypto, I think there have been many crypto game investments into top game builders, actually a few years, during the last bull market. Games take a long time to build. And I think the series of games that got investment are actually coming out later this year, the next year, and so on and so forth. And I think games is a really good way to entrance point For Web3, and its demand is the kind of the biggest, can be a great driver of mass adoption. And it's the most, it's the most digital native IP, right? So that's that's exciting, number one, right? So that's I'm really excited about the crypto gamings, you know, high quality games by top builders coming out slowly over the course of the next 1 year. I'm very excited by that because a lot of the investment were made a few years ago, 1 year, and they're finally coming out. So, I think secondly, what I'm also very excited by is the intersection of crypto and AI. And for Story Protocol, we are focused, I think we think big part of AI is AI generated content. No one has, you know, a lot of people are focused on the speed and performance of AI and making the next exciting AI application or getting a higher performance AI models and so on and so forth. We're focused on the IP layer of AI. How do you attribute and compensate the AI data? How do you, you know, when you're using other great IPs to fine tune the model, how do you compensate them? How do you track the outputs of the model? How do you get AI model when it's getting remixed and forked? How do we track that and attribute that and compensate that? But I think there's a lot of things that AI can, crypto can do in terms of like, to deface and just kind of, and all these different things to show the provenance and authentication around this content as well. Right. That's exciting. What crypto can do AI, decentralized can do to AI, because AI is about extreme abundance. Right. Now, the social media made everyone a creator. But AI has unbundled substantiation. You can have an idea and it will substantiate the entire thing. You can have a fully fleshed novel, fully fleshed video in a second. Right. So the it basically makes the content creation even easier, which means you're abundance. In the same way, internet has unbundled distribution. You know, printer has unbundled replication. AI has unbundled substantiation. Now you have a fully fleshed content right away, right? Way higher resolution. So more abundance and crypto is scarcity. So I think it's an interesting mix. So I think there needs to be more and more things that are happening. But a lot of people also in the kind of the crypto AI space are doing AI, what AI can already do. You shouldn't focus on that. You should focus on things that crypto uniquely enables for AI. Attribution provenance, like authentication, all these things. So those two things I'm very excited by. In crypto, I think, thirdly, just as a closing note, I think the fact that things like Falcaster is doing very well is very good, because I think crypto has really touched on DeFi and programmable money, but not everyone spends time doing 100x leverage trade in front of. Well, everyone spends time on TikTok, social media, and Netflix, metaverse, gaming, all these different entertainment media IP. And now that the fact that there's a consumer crypto is actually taking off, as you've seen from Falcaster. And there are actually more and more examples in Southeast Asia, games like Expat and all these things are getting traction in Vietnam, Southeast Asia, and so on and so forth. So that, I think that's exciting for me. Yeah,
the gaming industry in Asia is, and Singapore, all over the place, it is blowing up. I mean, it's crazy. And it's interesting because, your insights are spot on, because that's where I'm excited about, is gaming and AI and what, and the combination of AI meeting, DeFi and making intelligent decisions on the fly and better calculations. But gaming, I love because, one, I'm an old gamer. Two, that's where everything starts, right? Yeah, exactly. The innovation starts there.
It's Candy Crush that started mobile app. It's the Farmville that started social famous. It's mostly the games are at the very, very frontier of a new technological revolution, as
you
said.
Yeah, and now you add, you know, game creation, and then you add story protocol to the top of that, a layer on top of that.
That's right.
And you've got something really special, and then you can go. It's not just a desktop or a browser game or a phone game. It's now a complete experience that can be monetized, shared, and everyone takes part. Very cool. And of course, AI just kind of helps to pump everything and, you know, a bit more intelligent.
Rich, is that social media made everyone a creator.
Yeah.
But AI turns everyone into studio, fully fledged studio. Now you are a full stack studio, Hollywood level. In that world, when there's so much abundance of content, and that content is even high quality, the gating problem is not getting better quality content, getting the content in a cheap way. The gating item and the differentiator is going to be building a community around your IP and empowering a community and forming a community around your IP. Turning your IP into a network is more, because how do you penetrate to the sea of noise, incredibly crowded abundance of content? Now, 30 million TikTok videos a day, 3 million YouTube videos a day, that's going to even increase with all these things.
Yeah.
Again, notice you need an algorithmic miracle. To get notice, you need an amazing amount of performance marketing budget. Instead of that, we need an organized way for organized structure, standardized structure around how IP creators and individual IPs can ally with other IP creators, ally with other fans, and ally with, instead of just competing in the sea of noise. At the moment, I think it's more like a state of war. I'm fighting as a content creator against you. To get noticed. Instead of that, I want to build on top of you. I want to start building on top of you, ally with you, share the upside together. I think that's a better, that's even more needed when there's an accelerating abundance of content. Yeah.
Yeah, well said. And, you know, it's hard to explain Web3 to people and crypto in general, anything like that. It's like, yeah, I don't care if you know how many coins I have. You can go on the ledger and find out. Everything's transparent. And it is a community. It is a world of sharing. And people a lot of people don't understand the idea of what is coming is take my stuff. It's protected anyways. Build it, make it better. Take profits off of it. I'll take profits too. It's going to be a more communal, as to your point, communal world that we live in. And I think that's a fundamental shift that people, just like crypto in general, need to get over. They need to start to understand that, you know, a handshake will be a handshake. You know, trust, zero trust. So very, very interesting. I personally am very interested in tracking your progress, your success with Story Protocol, SY, because it seems monolithic, like it's a Herculean task, but it seems like you've got your head in the right spot and you're really putting the mechanisms in place, not just for short-term, you know, a short-term product, but a very, very long-term, long-tail solution to a lot of problems.
Like how Bitcoin make a programmable money layer and a Ethereum made a sound money layer. You know, building a programmable IP layer is going to be a very long, long, long road. But you know, it's about being focused and do what we can do in the short term that are going to have the highest impact in ROI, And then just like, Ethereum didn't say, I'm going to, take over the world financial system right away. They created very interesting DeFi applications that are used by Tinker, that are actually being built by Tinkerers and hackers in the very early days, and then gradually scaled. And that's the history of Ethereum or Bitcoin. So it all starts, you should have a very ambitious vision, but you should start small is how we think of it. It's a shame because I got to download this software for this podcast interview software today, but I need to if I try to open the settings, I need to restart this whole podcast. So I mean, there are a lot of interesting applications that are getting built on top. If you come to Story Protocol Twitter, you can see the demos of the product that are going to integrate with, from Magma to SACCOIN to all these different platforms. So I think I heavily recommend you visiting our Twitter, you visiting the founder's Twitter, like me and Jason Zhao and Jason Liv, a bunch of different demos and interesting applications that are actually getting built on top of it, and use the product. Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. And for our audience here, it is storyprotocol.xyz. You should definitely go check it out. Even if you're just curious, look at it. Look at the case studies, as you mentioned, SY. Really interesting. It's gonna make your head split in half a little bit, but it's really, really cool stuff when you really think about the problems it's going to solve. Hey, SY, do you have any events coming up where someone might see you in IRL or, at a conference?
Later this week, I'm actually speaking at Hong Kong Web3 Festival. Later this week, I'm speaking at Hong Kong Web3 Festival and basically kind of walking through the vision of Story Protocol.
And so
that's a venue that you can find me. And I'm also speaking at the Consensus in Austin. And you can see bunch of videos from us that on YouTube. You can type Story Protocol that we've done a demo. We've given speeches, especially either in Denver, a lot of events. So there are a lot of video recordings of these demos and speeches that we've done on our protocol.
Mm. And the demos are great. And hey, look, I might be a Consensus the next Consensus. So we should definitely meet up. Will be at NFT NYC tomorrow only, actually, if you're around. I don't think you're around, but
not around.
So for everyone, check them out. I think it's really interesting. And it's a great product. And like you were saying, SY, it's going to be set free. And it's going to take time, just like Ethereum took time for developers to get their hooks into it and make something of it. So thank you so much for joining us. And please check in with us again. We'd love to have you back for a progress report, see where you're at, and see some new case studies as they emerge.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Rich.
Yes. Pleasure.
Thank you so much. Yeah.